morning we're going to study Revelation chapter 13. It's a very interesting chapter. It ties together with other places in the Bible, the prophecies. In fact, this prophecy this morning that we're going to study ties directly to Daniel chapter 7. As we get into it, we're going to see that. We've been studying Daniel, and it's important to understand all of the prophecies so we can build upon them. And the book of Revelation certainly builds upon the book of Daniel. Let's begin reading in Revelation chapter 13 and verse 1. John the Revelator said, "And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns, and upon his heads the names of blasphemy." That first verse encompasses a lot of things, so we need to break it down as we go through it. Let's read the first part of it again. John said, "I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea." And I'm going to read to you in Revelation chapter 17 and verse 15. An angel there tells John what the seas represent. Revelation 17 and verse 15, John said, "He saith unto me, The waters which thou sawest, where the whore sitteth, are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues." So in Bible prophecy, we've already established that waters represent people. So seas are many people. And in this chapter this morning, we're going to see two different beasts coming up. One comes out of the sea or amongst all the people, and the other comes up out of the earth or where there are no people. So they're contrasted. We're going to get to the second beast in a few minutes. The second part of Revelation 13:1. First part, he said, "I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea." And then he says, "Having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns, and upon his heads the names of blasphemy." Now we've talked about it before in our study of Revelation chapter 12, but let's turn over there and read for a moment in Revelation chapter 12. Satan the dragon is all represented throughout the book of Revelation as a beast having seven heads and ten horns. In Revelation chapter 12 and verse 3, it says, "There appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon having seven heads and ten horns and seven crowns upon his heads." Now we're told down in verse 9 of that same chapter who this dragon is. Revelation 12:9, it says, "And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him." So the great red dragon is none other than Satan. So verse 3, let's read it again. Revelation 12:3, it says, "There appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon," or we could say Satan, "having seven heads and ten horns and seven crowns upon his heads." This represents Satan and his work. Just like in the Garden of Eden, he appeared through the serpent. He never comes directly out at us. He always works in a disguise. Of course, at the end, we know he is going to come, but he'll claim to be Jesus at that time, so he's still kind of disguised. But it says here that he has seven heads and ten horns, but at this time, it's interesting to notice, in chapter 12, it's giving kind of the history of the church. And verses 1 and 2 talk about the Jewish nation travailing in birth and waiting for the Messiah to come. And it says Satan is there, and he has seven heads and ten horns, and he's got seven crowns upon his heads. Those represent the kings of the Roman Empire. There were exactly seven kings before Rome became a republic. And it says the crowns are on their heads because they had rulership back at the time this was going on. Now as we continue back in Revelation chapter 13, we need to read verse 1 one more time. John says, "I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns 10 crowns, and upon his heads the name of blasphemy. So we see another beast coming up here, and he's got the same 7 heads and 10 horns. So this has to be Satan, only he's working in a new manner now. You notice in chapter 12 we just read that the crowns were on the heads, and now the crowns are on the horns. We know that according to the prophecy in Daniel, the fourth world empire would be divided into 10. There would be 10 horns on the fourth beast in Daniel's prophecy. And those 10 horns, Daniel was told, represented the 10 kingdoms that the Roman Empire would divide into. And this time here represents a time period in Revelation 13 when the Roman Empire was being divided up. And the 10 horns had the 10 crowns, because the 10 barbarian tribes were ruling their areas rather than the Roman Empire. And we notice that the heads here at the end of verse 1 of Revelation 13 no longer have the crowns. Instead it says they have the names of blasphemy. And if we traced it in history, we'd be able to see that in the year 330 they removed the seat of the Roman Empire from the city of Rome. And when the government was removed from that city, the Pope took over in their place. But the Pope at this time didn't have any real great ecclesiastical power, but he was there. He had taken the place of the Roman emperors, you could say, because he sat on the chair there in Rome. But it says that he had the names of blasphemy. And of course, the popes took many great and flattering names for themselves, which were blasphemous names. And so this verse is representing that. It says the 10 horns are on the 10 crowns. And there's the 10 nations of Europe had begun to rule. The Pope hadn't gotten his great power yet, but he had these blasphemous names that he took for himself. Big titles. Verse 2 continues, and it says, "The beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority." So now if you remember our prophecies, this should sound familiar to you. It says he looked like a leopard, he has feet like a bear, and his mouth was the mouth of a lion. Now if we keep our place here in Revelation 13 and we turn back to Daniel chapter 7, we're not going to read a lot here, but we want to read a little bit of this for anybody who's new or listening. In Daniel chapter 7, Daniel said he was shown several great beasts. We'll read in Daniel 7 and begin in verse 2. Daniel chapter 7 and verse 2, Daniel said, "I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of the heavens strove upon the great sea." So here we have a sea also, like we have in Revelation. Verse 3, "And four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse from one another." Verse 4 says, "The first was like a lion." Now you remember we just saw the beast in Revelation 13 had the mouth of a lion. So Daniel chapter 7 and verse 4, he says, "The first beast was like a lion." Verse 5 of that chapter, he says, "And behold, another beast, a second like to a bear." And remember in Revelation 13, we just saw that this beast decked their head, the feet of a bear. And verse 6 of Daniel 7, Daniel said, "After this I beheld, and lo, another like a leopard." And in Revelation 13, we just read that the beast looked like a leopard. And of course, in Daniel chapter 7 and verse 7, he saw the fourth beast. He says, "After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. So there's the beginning of the 10 horns, and we found the 10 horns once again back in the book of Revelation. While we're here, though, let's read Daniel 7 and verse 8. Daniel said, "I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. And if you look up the words mouth speaking great things in the Hebrew, you'll find that it comes from the word blasphemy. So he says this horn had eyes like the eyes of a man and his mouth was speaking blasphemies. So now let's turn back to Revelation 13 and continue on there. At the end of verse 1, we just read that upon his heads were the names of blasphemy. In verse 2, we will begin there again, Revelation 13:2. The beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion. And the dragon, or Satan, or the fourth empire, gave him his power and his seat and great authority. So Daniel saw these four empires as four separate beasts. He was looking forward to them. They would come in the future. John the Revelator was looking at the Roman Empire, and he was seeing how all four of those empires had influenced the current empire. They were all amalgamated, you could say. Certain of their religious beliefs, the way they persecuted people, and all these things had all been carried down. So each empire had drawn on the last one. So God has given us this vision and shown us that this fourth empire was an amalgamation of the four empires in Daniel's day. And at the end of verse 2 it says, and the dragon, or Satan, the fourth empire, gave him his power and his seat and great authority. The Roman Emperor Constantine is the one who moved the seat of government from the city of Rome, and he basically gave the city of Rome to the Pope at that time. He left him there. The Pope became the highest authority in Rome. So therefore the dragon gave the Pope his power, his seat, and great authority. An exact fulfillment of what the Bible says would happen here. Now verse 3 says, I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. Now this is encompassing many centuries of time here, but if the seven heads on the beast represented the seven Roman emperors, and we know the popes took their place, then we would have to look for one of the popes to have a deadly wound. And we know that that happened in the year 1798. Napoleon Bonaparte marched his general Berthier into the city of Rome. They rolled up in front of the Vatican in a carriage, and they went in and handcuffed the Pope and took him prisoner from the Vatican. And the Pope died under house arrest, exile from his place there where he had been. But verse 3 continues on and says, his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. If we could sit down today, and one of these days I'm going to compile them so we can look at them on PowerPoint. If you look at the newspaper articles that were being written in the early 1800s about the Pope and the Catholic Church, they were saying at that time they were guesstimating whether the Catholic Church would exist in 10 years. They didn't think they'd be around. They'd lost all their land, all their power, and the Pope had been put in prison. So the Bible says, though that the world, his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after him. And we see today, even though all those people thought they were about to be gone, that they had had a deadly wound, it has been healed, and all the world is wondering after the Pope and the Catholic Church today. We got a picture recently showing, I believe it said 140 of the ambassadors of the nations, all seated in the Sistine Chapel, with the Pope at the end on a very elevated platform, and all the ambassadors of the world seated in three or four rows along both sides of the building. And then they had pictures there. As many of the ambassadors came in, they walked down to the front and knelt down before the Pope and kissed his ring. Unbelievable that the ambassador of the United States would have to bow down to the Pope and kiss his ring. And I don't remember if there was a picture of our ambassador doing it, but many of the nation's ambassadors were kneeling down and kissing his ring as they came into this grand meeting. So it says here in verse 3 that all the world would wonder after this beast. And of course we know in Daniel, the thrust of Daniel chapter 7 was that there would be four world empires. Out of the fourth empire it would divide into the 10 nations, and then this little horn would come up amongst them. And Daniel said that that little horn in Daniel 7:25 would try to change God's times and his laws, and we know that the Catholic Church is the one who changed God's Ten Commandments. They took out the fourth commandment, the Sabbath day, took away the Sabbath day, and they say they took the sacredness and transferred it onto the day Sunday, and they eliminated the commandment that has to do with not having images, because their churches were all full of images. But we know they couldn't end up with 9 commandments, because when people heard that, they would have said, 9 commandments, wasn't there 10? So they took the 10th commandment, which in the Bible says you're not supposed to covet anything that belongs to your neighbor, and then it specifically mentions his wife. And they said, well, we'll take the 10th commandment and cut it in two. And so they made their 9th commandment, don't covet your neighbor's wife, and their 10th commandment, don't covet anything else that belongs to your neighbor. So they would still have 10. But Daniel said they would come along and change God's times and his laws, and Satan through them would try to cause people to transgress the 10 commandments and not even be aware that they were doing it. So John continues on here in Revelation 13, and he tells us in verse 3, I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death. His deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. Now I believe that's the day and time that we're in right now. Some people try to say that several of these verses have been fulfilled already, but I'm going to show you why I don't think they have been. I think that people believe they had been, and if they want to believe that it had a symbolic fulfillment, that's fine, but it's going to have a more literal one soon. Verse 4 continues, it says, they worship the dragon which gave power unto the beast. Today, people are worshiping Satan by keeping Satan's commandments. As people keep the day Sunday, it was dedicated to the sun god. Lucifer is the one who is called the light bearer, and he chose the sun as his emblem. So as people do these things that they don't understand, they're in a way worshiping Satan the beast. Read verse 4 one more time. It says, they worship the dragon which gave power unto the beast, and they worship the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? Today people are saying that. Who can be compared to the Pope? Who has the power of the Catholic Church today? Who could possibly make war against them? Verse 5, it says, there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. The Pope is gaining power every day today. These great meetings are going on, and it says someone is going to give him a mouth, or they're going to give him the ability to speak. We're going to see as we get a little further into this who that's going to be. It is interesting that our president that we have today, George Bush, is quoted as saying that the greatest way to honor the Pope, who just died, is to put his teachings into practice in America. George Bush has said that. And the Pope has been calling upon them to make Sunday the national day of religion, legalize it for the world and set it apart. So it's very interesting how things are moving into place today. Verse 5 once again says, there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. Now the only other place in the Bible that 42 months is mentioned is Revelation chapter 11, where it says that God will empower his 2 witnesses to prophesy for 42 months. There's soon to be a large battle going on over the truth, as it'll come from God's people, and the Pope, as it'll come from him at the end. Verse 6 continues on and says, now the 42 months equals 1260 days, so people have said that in the past this was the 1260 years from 538 to 1798. But that it may be a symbolic fulfillment of it. Verse 6 continues on, says, he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name. The Catholic Church does not accept the name of the Creator. His tabernacle, the tabernacle in heaven is called the tabernacle of the testimony, where the 10 commandments are, so they're blaspheming his tabernacle by claiming to have changed his 10 commandments, which are kept there perfect as they came forth. And then it says at the end of verse 6, and them that dwell in heaven. The Catholic Church today is blaspheming the heavenly angels, because I have their books at home where they claim that when the mass service is performed that the angels have to fly down from heaven and they gather around the altar where the priest is doing the mass, and that they from down here ask God in heaven what they need, and that's how they get the things they need, because they have to come to the mass. So therefore they're blaspheming the angels, because Jesus said that the angels of the little children do constantly behold the face of the Father. So why would they need to come and attend the Catholic Mass to receive what they need? So truly they blaspheme God's name today, his tabernacle and his commandments, and the angels in heaven. Verse 7 continues on, and it says, "It was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them, and power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations." Now, the reason I have a problem with the past fulfillment of these verses is, it said up in verse 3 is where it dealt with him having his deadly wound, and then it says the deadly wound is healed. The deadly wound occurred in 1798, people say, but these verses precede it in time, or they come after it, excuse me. The deadly wound precedes these verses. So he had his deadly wound in 1798, so his restoration of power, and these verses are coming after that. It's saying he's going to have power for 42 months, and the biggest reason that I believe it is a future fulfillment is verse 7. It says, "It was given unto him to make war with the saints." Now he did that once, but that was before his deadly wound. It says, "and to overcome them," but now notice what it says next. "And power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations." Has the Catholic Church ever had power over all kindreds and languages and nations? They never have. Even when the Pope was in his greatest prime in the Dark Ages, there were many nations, many kindreds of people. The American Indians were over here, South America and all these places, they never heard of the Pope. So he never had power over all these people. But here at the end, through the United Nations and the things that are going on today, when he gets this absolute final power, it will be over all kindreds and tongues and nations. That verse has never been fulfilled, and no one can even argue that it has been fulfilled. Verse 8 continues on, and it says, "And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb, slain from the foundation of the world." So it tells us that everybody whose name is not written in the book of life is going to worship the beast at the end. And we know that didn't happen in the Dark Ages, because the opening of the book of life is coming here at the end. This is another thing that tells us that we're talking about the last days. Verse 9 says, "If any man have an ear, let him hear. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. He that killeth with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and faith of the saints." So it tells us here at the end that those who will try to put God's people into captivity in the end will eventually go into captivity themselves. Those who attempt to kill with the sword will be killed with the sword. And it says, "Here is the patience and faith of the saints." God's people are going to have a lot of faith and a lot of patience here at the end to go through the final trials that are coming. Now verse 11 begins to introduce us to the other beast in this chapter. Verse 11 says, "I beheld another beast," not the same beast, but another beast, "coming up out of the earth." Now, every other beast that's been mentioned in Daniel's day and in this chapter in Revelation, they've always come up out of the sea. But this beast, it says, comes up out of the earth. It says, "And he had two horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon." So we have to look for a superpower here at the end to fulfill this verse. Every other one of these beasts came up out of the many nations of Europe, out of the millions and millions of people, so they were represented as coming up out of the sea. But it says there's another beast coming at the end that comes up out of the earth, and we believe this beast represents the United States of America. It says he has two horns, and we believe that represents the separation of power in our government to keep it in check. It says he had two horns like a lamb. Our government certainly came up like a lamb. The United States of America was a beautiful, peace-loving nation. It has some bad stains upon its history and the Civil War and things, but for the most part, we were a peaceful, loving people. We took in immigrants from all over the world, welcomed them here, and our country has been a nice country. But verse 11 covers a lot of time, I believe. And at the end of verse 11, it says, "He had two horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon." And I believe in just the last few years, the United States has begun to speak like the dragon. Today, we're over there telling other countries, you will do what we want you to do, or we'll bomb you into submission. Our country is truly speaking like the dragon today. And I'm not getting into the politics of our wars or anything like that, but I'm saying our country is not like the lamb it started out to be. Today, it's become the enforcer of the earth. The very name United States brings terror into the minds of people in many of the other countries. If they say the ships of the United States are pulling up off the coast out there, the people are terrified. You know, they don't know what's going to happen. We've gone over there and run over many of these countries. And I'm not, like I say, I'm not getting into the good or bad of that. It's just the Bible says that this power would come up out of the earth. In other words, it would come up in a desolate region where there weren't a lot of people. The United States did that. It would have two horns like a lamb, and he would speak like a dragon. And we're certainly doing that today. Verse 12 tells us, and he exerciseth all the power of the first beast before him, and causeth the earth and them that dwell therein to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. So now in this verse we have both beasts represented here. We have the beast that comes up out of the earth, and it says he's going to exercise all the power of the first beast before him, and he's going to make everyone worship the beast whose deadly wound was healed. So there's our other beast in this chapter. They're both mentioned in this verse. We have to break this verse down, though, very carefully and look at it. We have to understand the symbolism of the Bible to be able to understand these prophecies. Verse 12 says, he exerciseth all the power of the first beast before him. Notice then it says, and causeth the earth. It's very specific. He causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. So I want you to think about a minute this morning how you could make the earth worship the beast. Can you make the dirt worship the beast? That's a very strange thing, but yet it's very specific. It says he's going to cause the earth and the inhabitants of it to worship this beast. I want you to turn back with me now to the book of Leviticus, and we're going to turn to chapter 26 of the book of Leviticus. We're going to see what God said to the Jewish people here when he was taking them and giving them the promised land. He told them what was going to happen if they didn't walk the way they should. We'll begin in Leviticus chapter 27 and verse 27. God said to his people in Moses' day, and if you will not hearken, and if you will not for all this hearken unto me, but walk contrary to me, then I will walk contrary unto you also in fury. And I, even I, will chastise you seven times for your sins. And ye shall eat the flesh of your sons, and the flesh of your daughters shall ye eat. He told them, it's going to get so bad when I besiege your cities, you'll eat your own family. And we find in history that did happen. Verse 30, he said, I will destroy your high places and cut down your images and cast your carcasses upon the carcasses of your idols, and my soul shall abhor you. And I will make your cities waste and bring your sanctuaries unto desolation. And I will not smell the savior of your sweet odors. And I will bring the land unto desolation, and your enemies shall dwell, that which dwell therein shall be astonished at it. And I will scatter you among the heathen, and will draw out a sword after you, and your land shall be desolate, and your cities waste. Now, verse 34 is what we came to read. Notice what it says then. Then shall the land enjoy her Sabbaths, as long as it lieth waste, and ye be in your enemy's land. Even then shall the land rest and enjoy her Sabbaths. As long as it lieth desolate, it shall rest, because it did not rest in your Sabbaths when you dwelt in it. So God said that the earth keeps the Sabbath along with his people. We're told not to till the earth or work on the earth on the Sabbath day. So when we turn back to Revelation 13 again, and you can read that verse 12 once more. Revelation 13 and verse 12, it says, the first beast, he exerciseth all the power of the first beast before him. Sorry, the second beast this is. He exerciseth all the power of the first beast before him, and causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. I submit to you that the only way that the United States of America can cause the earth and the inhabitants here to worship the beast, the Pope, and his altered set of commandments is to enforce the keeping of Sunday. When the time comes that they try to make men work on Sabbath and keep Sunday, they will also be making the earth worship the beast, because they'll be making it rest on Sunday and they'll be making it work on Sabbath. So therefore, as the Bible says, he causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. The day is coming when we know they're going to pass a law in the United States of America. In fact, there's a large group working for it today. The Lord's Day Alliance is calling today and saying all the morals and problems in society are because we don't make everybody go to church once a week. And we need to make Sunday the national day of rest. And there's been laws introduced in the last few years trying to do this, to make Sunday the national day of rest. And when they do that, they will have negated the Creator's law. And the Creator, the Bible says in Revelation 11, will then withhold his reign from him, just like he did his wicked Jewish children and back in their day when they didn't know it was right. He sent them drought and famine. And God says he's going to do that at the end when they take away his worship, the keeping of his Sabbath day. Now we continue on in verse 13. This is speaking about the United States, or this second power. It says, he doeth great wonders, so that he maketh fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. Now some people believe that this is going to be a man who's going to call fire out of the sky. That's a possibility. But I think today it's actually being fulfilled, because don't we bring fire down out of the sky on the earth in the sight of men? The United States of America sends missiles in, all kinds of things, and they're truly forcing the people to do what they want to do. Verse 13, he doeth great wonders so that he make a fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. Today we're already seeing that fulfilled. I'm really not sure there's going to be someone come calling fire out of the sky. Verse 14, it says, and he deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles or wonders, it says, which he had power to do in the sight of the beast. Eventually, the Catholic Church, the Pope, I believe, is going to be set up basically as the highest authority. It's already occurring, because our ambassadors go and bow down to him, so therefore they're saying he's a greater authority than they are. And it's already beginning, and it says we're going to do wonders in his sight and say to the people that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. I believe that the military might of the United States and the United Nations is going to be brought to bear on any country that doesn't want to go along with what's going to happen here at the end. In fact, Daniel 11 tells us that, because it talks about at the end of chapter 11 of Daniel, it talks about the final war where they'll go forth, they go racing up through the nations there, and it tells which ones will fall to them and which ones will not. And it talks about this final battle that's coming, where they're going to try to make all the earth do these things. Verse 15, it continues and says, he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. Now, do you really think, some people are trying to teach today, that the image of the beast is some kind of a statue, and that this person is going to breathe life into this statue, and the statue is going to stand there and say that everybody needs to worship him or you should kill them? That's such a preposterous idea that I can't even really believe it's being taught, but yet it is. Verse 15 is really saying that he has power to give life unto the image of the beast. The image of the beast, if you look this word up, I was studying it this morning, it represents a likeness or a resemblance, some kind of thing that pays honor to something. So as they take the Sunday law, the Catholic Church is the one who says they put the sacredness on Sunday. As they begin to make men, women, and children in the earth obey the Pope, they set up a way of honoring him. It's his image. And it says they give breath unto it so that it can speak. Now if we look back earlier in this chapter, In verse 5, it's speaking about the first beast of the Catholic Church. Revelation 13:5, it said, there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. So what's going to happen is the United States of America is going to do just what George Bush has said. They're going to honor the last pope by putting his teachings into practice here in the United States. And when we pass laws, our legislature will have spoken, and they will have given power to the image of the beast to do these things. And we know that as it comes down to the end, it's going to be a very bitter battle, and it says that eventually it will be enforced with the death decree. And we're told there in Revelation 13:15, at the end of it, that he would cause that as many who would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And eventually they're going to seek to eradicate the people who are doing what's right. It's very interesting today in the Catholic book on prophecy. One of them, it's mentioned in the book The Thunder of Justice. In this book, it tells in there that Jesus is appearing to the Catholic Church today, and Mary's appearing, and she's telling them that the calamities on earth are coming because men won't obey the Pope and keep Sunday holy like it should be kept holy. So as the calamities become worse and worse, that we know that the people are going to think we've got to do something about this. As they're given over to this false belief, as the demonic miracles continue in the Catholic Church that are happening today, tells us later in Revelation 18:23, that all nations will be deceived by the Catholic Church's sorcery. And today they have all these statues that are bleeding. They say it's blood, oils oozing out of some of them, all these miracles that are occurring, and the people are saying that must be God's church because he's doing all these miracles. But if they would think about it, God commanded us not to even make a statue, so do you think he would actually do a miracle through a chunk of rock statue? These are demonic miracles, but they're convincing the people. And in the end, it's going to be like it was in Jesus' day. It's better for a few people to perish than for all the nations of the earth to be destroyed. And they're going to believe when Satan arrives here that they have to eradicate the last few of these people who won't obey and keep Sunday as the Pope has commanded. Verse 16, it says, he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in his right hand or in their foreheads. Now we've got to understand what the mark is. We're down here to the mark of the beast, the thing that has probably had more wild speculation regarding what it is than anything else. Over and over, God says that his laws will be a token in his people's foreheads and in their hands. And I'm going to read that with you in one place. Exodus chapter 13, he told them the things that they were supposed to do. And Exodus chapter 13 and verse 14. Exodus 13:14, it says, And it shall be when thy son asketh thee in time coming, saying, what is this? In other words, why do we do it? That thou shalt say unto him, by strength of hand the Lord brought us from Egypt, from the house of bondage. And it came to pass when Pharaoh would hardly let us go, that the Lord slew all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both the firstborn of man and the firstborn of beasts. Wherefore I sacrifice to the Lord all that openeth the matrix, being males, but all the firstborn of my children I redeem. Now notice verse 16. It shall be for a token upon thy hand, and for frontlets between thy eyes, for by strength of hand the Lord brought thee out of Egypt. So the Bible tells us that God has given these things to us, and his law is supposed to be a mark in our forehead. The forehead is a sign of what we believe. The belief of God, which he's put into our minds, causes us to do what he wants us to do. And of course, the hand is a sign of what you actually do. You can look at a person, you can't really tell what the person's thinking or what they're going to do until they actually raise their hand to do it. So they believe it in their mind, they receive the Pope's mark in their forehead, and then they put it into practice when they raise their hand to do it. So it's telling us at the end of time, these people are going to have someone else's mark in their forehead. Rather than what God has told them to do, they're going to do something else. And it says that in many places in the Old Testament, God talks about his commandments and says that they will be a sign in the people's hand and a mark in their forehead. See, it sets us apart if we do what God has told us to do. If we obey him, we raise our hand to do what he's told us to do, and we believe it in our minds. So therefore, it's a sign in our forehead and in our minds. One other place I'll read to you is Deuteronomy chapter 11. He was giving his people admonition here about not going with the heathen. And in verse 13, Deuteronomy 11:13, God said, "It shall come to pass, if ye shall hearken diligently unto my commandments, which I command you this day, to love the Lord your God and to serve him with all your heart and with all your soul, that I will give you the rain of your land in his due season, the first rain and the latter rain, that thou mayest gather in thy corn and thy wine and thy oil. And I will send grass in thy fields for thy cattle, that thou mayest eat and be full. Take heed to yourselves, that your heart be not deceived, and ye turn and serve other gods and worship them. And then the Lord's wrath shall be kindled against you, and he shall shut up the heaven, that there be no rain. And the land shall yield not her fruit, lest ye perish quickly from off the good land which the Lord giveth you." Now he's talking about his commandments again in verse 18, and he says, "Therefore shall ye lay up these my words in your heart and in your soul, and bind them for a sign upon your hand, that they may be as frontlets between your eyes." The word sign there is the same as the word mark. It can be translated either way. So he told them that they would lay up his words or his commandments and bind them for a mark upon their hand, that they may be as frontlets between your eyes. Between your eyes is your forehead, it's your mind. So he told them that his commandments were going to be a mark in their hand and a mark in their forehead. And he told them in verse 19, "Ye shall teach them your children, speaking of them when thou sittest in thy house, when thou walkest by the way, when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt write them on the doorposts of thine house and upon thy gates, that your days may be multiplied in the days of your children in the land which the Lord sware unto your fathers to give them, as the days of heaven upon the earth. For if ye shall diligently keep all these commandments, which I command you to do them, to love the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, and to cleave unto him, then will the Lord drive out all these nations before you, and ye shall possess greater nations and mightier than yourselves. Every place whereon the soles of your feet shall tread shall be yours, from the wilderness and Lebanon, from the river Euphrates, even unto the uttermost sea shall your coast be." He told them if they kept his commandments, their days here on earth would be like the days of heaven. Unbelievable. So here at the end of time, we just read there where he's going to take away the rain from them back then if they wouldn't obey his commandments. Here at the end of time, it says that they're going to, in verse 16 of Revelation 13, Revelation chapter 13 and verse 16, "He, the United States, causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand," in other words, to keep this altered set of commandments, "or in their forehead." It says you can receive it either place, because see, some people are going to receive it in the hand because they don't believe that the Pope had the power to do this, but they're just going to go along with it. So they only receive it in their hand, says, or in their foreheads. And there are others, there are millions today on earth who believe that the Pope is the supreme authority on earth and that he can change God's law or do anything. So those people are going to receive it in their foreheads because they actually believe the lie. Others are just going to go along with it, but all are going to be lost who do that. Verse 17, it says, "And that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name." So it says the day is coming when they're not going to let you buy or sell. You know, this one verse right here, I think, should convince all infidels that this is a legitimate prophecy. Because if John were making this up, remember, this was written in the days when everyone rode a camel, and they walked all over the earth with a little bag of gold coins on their belt. Can you imagine if you told those men, there's a day coming, we're going to make it where you can't buy or sell? They would have thought you were crazy. Back then, you could always buy or sell. Do you think the Roman emperor could keep any of them from buying or selling? If they had money and they went somewhere where they had food, they're going to sell them food. But the Bible said a day was coming when they would have such control that they wouldn't be able to buy or sell. And in the United States of America today, they're pushing for the smart card, a new card that we need because of terrorism. And in this card, they're going to put all your personal information. They're saying that the card will contain a scan of the retina of your eye. So when you walk up to an airplane to get on the airplane, you'll have to look into this thing, and it'll look at your eyeball, and it will know that, yes, that is you. It will know that you're the right person. And that eyeball retina scan is millions of times more accurate than our fingerprint. And just think of how they're able to find people with fingerprints today. And they're already saying they're going to put that into your card. The day is coming, you're going to have to go down to a local post office or the license bureau, look into a machine, and it's going to look at your eyeball. It's going to collect the data about your eye, and they're going to put it in your new smart card. And this credit card that they're developing will be the National ID card. They're calling it that today. And they say they can put all your credit card information in it and everything. The next thing they're working on is eliminating cash money. There's been articles in Time and Newsweek about it, talking about how the first great leap was when we got rid of gold and we went to paper. Some people would hardly give up their gold coins because they could hardly believe that this piece of paper was worth as much as a big gold coin. And the second great leap for the United States people was when they began to write checks. And they could write $100,000 on a piece of paper and hand it to you, and would it be worth that? Some people could hardly accept that. The next one that's coming is they're calling for the elimination of cash from our society. They want to get rid of all cash. They say if we get rid of cash, there won't be any more drug deals because there won't be all this money out there. There won't be any more bank robberies. If there wasn't any money at the bank that you can carry away in cash, why go rob a bank? So they're calling for us to go to a electronic society where when you get paid this Friday from your employment, they won't give you any money, they won't give you a check, they'll simply sit down at their computer, push a few buttons, and from their bank account, $500 or whatever your pay is will flow over into your bank account, and the only way you'll spend that money is with your card. You'll go to this store and that store and scan your card. The government's in favor of this because then they'll get all their tax money. They can do a new flat tax, and every transaction that occurs, they'll get so many percent of it. We won't need the IRS anymore. They've got a lot of good sounding things here. But when it comes to this point, which it's coming to, they're moving it down here and it's going to happen. When it gets to that point, just think, you could have millions of dollars in your bank account and you have your little card there and you go down to the store to buy a loaf of bread. If they've turned your number off on your card, when they scan your card at the grocery store, you might say, well, I've got $5 million in my account. And the clerk says at the grocery store, I'm sorry, sir, or I'm sorry, ma'am, but your card's not working. So we see that we're coming to this day and time when they're actually going to be able to make it where you can't buy or sell. It's going to happen. It's right around the corner for us. Terrorism and these other things, Satan has been using these things to force this upon the people and to get it here. But we're almost there to the day when they can turn off your card and you couldn't buy anything. Just think, you couldn't pay your electric bill, couldn't pay your water bill, couldn't pay the mortgage on your house. Think of the pressure that's going to come upon people to take the mark of the beast. That's why we've been told to get out of debt, get in the country where we can raise some food and things, because the day is coming when if your house is mortgaged, you'd lose it in a few months. How many months would it take before they'd foreclose upon it? How much time before they'd repossess your automobile, take all your things away from you? It's going to be so terrifying to people that most all of them are going to go along with this. I believe most of the people on earth are going to receive the mark of the beast in their hand rather than their forehead because they're going to just go along with it. Okay, well, if I've got to do that to get it, I will do it. And it is a fact that in the last several years, the International Monetary Fund, the international bank that loans money to countries, some of the countries that they've loaned money to after natural disasters, they have told them that they have to institute Sunday as the day of rest in those countries when they have loaned them this money. This is a fact coming down from the United Nations. They've been doing this quietly behind the scenes. The Pope is using so much power out there, you cannot even imagine it. And we here in the United States are like sheep at the slaughterhouse. We're just outside the door, but we don't realize what's really going on. It's getting very close here to the end. So verse 17, Revelation chapter 13 and verse 17 says it's going to be that no man might buy or sell save he that had the mark or the name of the beast. The mark will be the keeping of Sunday. The name of the beast will be Catholic, or the number of his name. And verse 18 tells us about the number. We've all heard about the big 666. Verse 18 says, here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. So it tells us here that if we have spiritual understanding, we'll be able to understand this. But it says the man is a number. You have to count his number. You have to add it up. And it's very interesting that the popes have a crown, which they've taken out of circulation now, a golden crown at the Vatican that they wore for centuries. And on this crown, it had an inscription, and it said Vicarius. It's spelled V-I-C-A-R-I-U-S. That was the first word. That's where we get our word vicar from. It means representative, vicarious. The second word was fili, F-I-L-I-I. The word fili is where we get our word for son, means relationship. Vicarious, fili, and the word third word was the word di. That word is spelled D-E-I. The word di is where we get the word deity in the English language, which means God. So the popes sat on their throne in Rome for centuries. They wore this crown which said Vicarius Fili Dei. The meaning of that Latin phrase is representative of the Son of God. They sat on their throne and they said, because we are the representative of the Son of God, we have power to amend the things he did. We have power to change his Ten Commandments. We've taken the sacredness from Saturday and moved it over to Sunday. We've made it okay to bow down in front of statues, to pray to the saints, to do all these things. And this very title that they claim gives them this power when we add it up, the numerical equivalent of these Roman numerals. You're all familiar with Roman numerals. You'll see lots of clocks. Down at the 5 o'clock position, they have a V or a U, depending on how they're using it. I always stood for one. So as we take this great name that the Pope says gave him the power to change God's commandments, kill the heretics, do all of these things, as we add it up, beginning with the word vicarious, the first V has a number value of 5. The letter I has a number value of 1. The letter C has a numerical value of 100. That's where we get the word century, 100. A has no value, R has no value, I, once again, is worth 1. The U and the V are used interchangeably in the Roman numerals, so the U is worth 5 more. The S has no value. Then we get to our second word, the word fili. The F has no equivalent value in Roman numerals. Then we have an I, so there we have another 1. The L is worth 50 in the Roman numerals. And then we have 2 more I's after that, so we have 2 more 1's. Then we move down to the third word of this great title they took for themselves, the word DI. The letter D has an equivalent of 500 in the Roman numerals. So we have 500 there for the D. The E has no value, and the I has the value of 1. So I'm going to start over now. I'm going to add these for you. You can add them on your own sheet. 5, 6, then 100 for the sea, that's 106. Then that I, the second I in the word vicarious, is another 1, so that would be 107. Then we have the U, which has a value of 5, that would be 112. Then we move down to the word philai, the F has no value, but the I is worth 1, so that would be 113. The L is worth 50, so that would put us up to 163. Then we have 2 more 1s, so that would be 164, 165. Then we move down to the third word, di, and we add 500 more to 165, takes us to 665. And then the final I in the word di takes us to 666. So the Bible told us that the number of this man who is going to change God's laws, who is going to persecute the saints, and who is going to bring on the final persecution at the end to try to make people be obedient to Satan and his altered set of Ten Commandments. This man's name, or the power of his title, would equal 666. And we see that the Pope of Rome has this title. And it's very interesting. He has several other titles which in their numerical value in other languages, which are different, also equal 666. People have tried to say that this is going to be Caesar or Napoleon or one of these guys, but how have they caused anyone to be disobedient to God's law? And they're not around today to enforce it here at the end. These are all smoke screens that the Catholic Church has come up with to try to shift the focus off themselves. The fact is that most of the world disobeys God's Ten Commandments today and keeps Sunday instead of the seventh-day Sabbath because the Pope changed it so long ago and they don't realize it. That's why it says in Revelation 17 that this great harlot church has made all the nations drunk with their false teachings, because people have been doing it for so long they don't even realize what they're doing. But here at the end, God has told us to bring the people back to his commandments, to keep them so that they can be a mark in our forehead that we believe them, and a sign in our hand as we practice the Sabbath and keep it. God bless you today, and I hope you've gained a blessing from our study this morning. I encourage you, if you're listening on the internet, to listen to our sermons on Daniel chapter 2 and Daniel chapter 7 in conjunction with this, if you haven't heard them before.